Good morning, I'm Jim Packard, sitting in for Larry Mueller, who's off chasing the elusive muskie this weekend. And we're going to be talking about consumer protection with Janet Jenkins, Administrator of the Bureau of Consumer Protection in the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Janet, it's a pleasure to have you back in the studio. Nice to see you.
Thank you, Jim. It's always a pleasure to be here.
Last week, the Wisconsin Department of Revenue issued a warning about a Craigslist buyer using fake checks to pay for items sold. What's involved in the scam, and what advice do you have for people who would like to avoid doing the same thing?
It's a classic fake check scam, which we've seen many of in the past few years. As technology has gotten better, people have been able to print what appear to be other people's checks and do it quite well. And this involves a seller who wants to sell something on Craigslist, gets a contact, usually by email, from a buyer, and the buyer says, I want to purchase this, and, you know, they make arrangements to do that, and then the buyer emails back and says, you know, the check's on the way, but, you know, my office staff made a mistake and made it out for more than what the price of the item you're selling me is. So please deposit the check right away and send me by wire, like MoneyGram or something like that, the difference. And the check that the buyer sends appears to be, well, it looks like, to many people, a Wisconsin Department of Revenue check. And sometimes it's made out in the name to the actual seller of the item. Sometimes it's made out to the person who's buying the item, and then I assume there's an endorsement. And obviously it's not a real Department of Revenue check. The Department of Revenue check doesn't issue checks to buy things on Craigslist. And you know, the best thing to do is to, first of all, if the check you receive anything for any transaction that's in an amount greater than the agreed upon price, and you're asked to deposit it and wire back the difference, don't do it. If that one simple thing will stop you from becoming involved in fake check frauds.
All right. If you'd like to join the conversation, it's easy. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Or email us at talk@wpr.org. Scott's on the phone in Viroqua. Let's see what's on his mind today. Hello, Scott.
Hello. My son recently purchased a car, and he is only 15, and he got such a great deal, he thought he'd put it back on this Craigslist. And he had an offer back from Louisiana, which seems like an awful long ways to be buying a 95 Plymouth Voyager for $1,000, but he sent us a check for $3,000, of which he is to keep $1,000 and give the trucker that's going to pick up the car the other $2,000. But, you know, it just seems like it's too much of a good thing.
You're right. It is. And that's precisely what I was talking about. That is a fake check fraud. Because your son is going to be given a check in an amount that's greater than the sale price of the vehicle and is asked to send back money. And what will happen is that if he does give a check or something to the truck driver who, you know, is going to handle the transfer, the check that he was given will ultimately bounce, and he'll be out $2,000. So don't do it.
Yeah. Okay.
All right, Scott. Good luck to you. Appreciate hearing from you. If you'd like to join in, we have a couple lines open at 1-800-642-1234. There's a warning circulating on the internet warning people to ignore calls from area code 809. Are you aware of problems with that area code, and why are there problems?
We haven't received any complaints at Consumer Protection. But I'm aware that in other places in the country, there is a fraud going on with 809 area codes, and 809 belongs to the Dominican Republic. And typically the way it works is that you'll get a voicemail message or actually a call, and call that you answer from someone that indicates you should call this number back for some important reason, like somebody's sick in your family or something like that. And when you call back, you don't realize, or most people don't realize, that they're calling the Dominican Republic, and the charge is greater. Now, while that is going on, it's not new. It's gone on for a long time. It's gone on with other area codes, and it's kind of assumed urban legend proportions on the internet. It really isn't all that common. The internet includes statements like you'll be charged $24,000 on your next phone bill. It's nowhere near that much, but you need to be aware that, you know, if that 809 does mean it's the Dominican Republic, and it's, you know, it's a legitimate area code. So, of course, if you know someone or want to talk to someone in the Dominican Republic, you know, that it's not a scam in that fashion.
Mm-hmm. But otherwise, the cost per minute is going to be exorbitant?
It's not really going to be exorbitant. Most, I mean, it's going to be higher. But, you know, I read some information and indicated that, you know, usually the cost of the phone call is like $25 or $50 as opposed to $24,000. $50 is still a lot of money, but it's nowhere near $24,000.
Back to the phones we go to Jerry in St. Louis. Hello, Jerry.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine.
I'm traveling for, through Jefferson for a car swap meet right now, and I was involved in selling some vehicles myself. I received a check drawn on a California bank, and I was instructed to also that I was going to be receiving more money than I required, and to ship the car out to the East Coast, out to Virginia. And all this was done by email, and I will never deal with anyone that, with email that I can't actually talk to, but they explained to me that most of the time these things take place on one coast or the other so that no one will show up to prosecute in court. But as soon as I received the email to ship the car, I said, oh, well, I'm going to deliver it myself, and they got irate on the internet. So they said, no, we want it shipped to such and such address. Well, I called out there, talked to the police department, and they said, well, we know those people. And they followed them, called me back, and they said they had indicted them on five federal charges. The bank out in California, Monterey, California, said they had a desk full of these bad checks but didn't have the time to follow up, so I figured I would follow up. And they said, well, will you fly out here if we pay for you to fly out and prosecute? I said, I'll be happy to. She confessed, and she was just a middleman, and I just didn't feel like I wanted to let it go at that. So, in talking to the detectives out there, they arrested her. They confiscated $10,000 in checks from other unsuspecting people, and so I put the end to that one.
Well, thank you for sharing that, because you know, personal experiences like yours really do drive it home to consumers that, you know, these things are out there. They seem legitimate, but they need to be extremely cautious. So, Jerry, thanks a lot.
All right, dear. Bye.
All right, Jerry. Good luck to you. Thanks very much for your call, and enjoy your trip through the state. Ken in Woodruff is next. Hello, Ken.
Hi. About a year ago, I had a surgery, which was, as usual, expensive, and I paid the bill. And before I paid the bill, I asked for a detailed listing of the drugs, et cetera. And there was a $1,200-and-some-dollar adjustment made by the hospital, I assume, whatever adjustment is. And now, a year later, a little more than a year later, I got a bill for $700, and somehow or other, $500-and-some-dollars of the adjustment disappeared. Now, I've called them twice, and they said, sure, we'll get somebody to get back to you. That's about a month ago. Is it legal, shall we say, to say, oh, by the way, a year later, you owe me another $700?
It might be, but not under your circumstances. It might be if they, for example, legitimately incurred extra expenses that they forgot to put on your original bill. But if, in fact, they adjusted the bill and you paid it, then everybody, it's a done deal. And that adjustments can't be added back on.
Okay. It's not a matter of the time. It's a matter of fact. It's a matter of once you've paid the bill, the bill's paid.
Right. Unless, as I said, that, you know, they're charging you for different things than that were on your other bill, but had forgotten to charge you for sooner. I mean, if it's a legitimate charge, fine. But here they agreed to adjust it. You paid the adjusted amount, and it's done.
Now, well, I will have to assume that they will stop sending me bills once someone deigns to call me back. So I've been waiting and waiting, and I'm just going to wait to see what they do.
I would wait for some amount of time, but then I think it might be better to become a squeaky wheel. And if you're not getting any response, so that they know this is not going to go away, and that they need to deal with it. And if you have any problems, you know, please contact us at Consumer Protection, and we can see if there's something that we might be able to do.
Okay. Yeah, great. Okay.
All right. Thanks very much. Appreciate hearing from you. We're talking with Janet Jenkins, who's the administrator of the Bureau of Consumer Protection in the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. And again, if you want to use the email address, what is that for the hotline?
It's datcp.hotline.
It's DATCP, no dot?
I think there is
a dot.
We've had several changes in email addresses in the government, but the easiest way is to simply Google Consumer Protection, Wisconsin Consumer Protection. It'll take you to the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection website, and there's a tab that says Consumer Protection.
All right. Thanks very much. And, of course, you're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Jim Packard with you on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Glad to be with you and talking about consumer protection with Janet Jenkins, Administrator of the Bureau of Consumer Protection in the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. There was a news release that came out of your office this morning about a ticket scam involving the Green Bay Packers. What's going on there?
Well, once again, this is something of a perennial event, since typically there are Green Bay Packer ticket scams because Green Bay Packer tickets are very difficult to get. And in this case, a person went online and found what were represented as season tickets and decided, wow, this is the greatest deal I can think of. And so purchased them and never got any tickets. And when contacted, the seller said, oh, they must have gotten lost in the mail. So the idea is, you know, make certain if you're looking for Packer tickets that you deal with a reputable ticket agent. And there are, you know, any number around, or deal with, you know, a travel agent who can work the arrangements for you.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just make certain that you have those real tickets in hand, particularly before you drive to a game if you're not from Green Bay, or even fly to a game if you're not from Wisconsin.
And you've offered several tips to avoid becoming a ticket fraud victim, including asking for a fax of the actual tickets.
Right. Before you actually agree to buy them, ask the seller to fax you a copy of the tickets on, you know, or either scan them in and send them to you online, so you can see that the individual actually has what looks to be Green Bay Packer tickets. Now, again, just like with the fake check fraud that we were talking about earlier, given computer technology, it's not always possible to tell whether the tickets you get are counterfeit or not. And so, you know, that again brings home the idea that you really should deal with a reputable ticket broker or a travel agent, and not somebody who you don't know, never met, either, you know, online on some list or eBay or something like that.
Okay. Patrick in Waukesha is next. Patrick, go ahead.
Oh, thanks, Jim, and Ms. Jenkins. I've got a problem, and I'm wondering if I could just get a comment, and I'd just like to air my view on this. And it involves cows. Years ago, during the RBGH fiasco, we had concerns about what's going in our milk, and we were told that if we had a problem with it, we could buy a cow, and that would solve the problem. So we did. So we bought into a good farmer that we knew, good practices, and we bought a herd of cows. Now, it's individuals. Can individuals own cows, I guess, is my one question. And at what when does that cap come in to restrict our access to milk that comes from cows that we own?
I'm really sorry I can't answer that question. I don't know anything, or I don't know very much, about the agriculture side of the department. But my suggestion would be that, again, if you go to the department website and find the Division of Food Safety, I'm sure that either someone there can give you the answer to what you know, or can directly refer you or transfer you to someone who does.
Well, okay. Well, thank you so much for letting me get on the air.
All right, Patrick. Thank you very much. We appreciate hearing from you. And we have lines open if you have a question about consumer issues at 1-800-642-1234. Of course, our email address is still talk@wpr.org. Let's talk about the most frequent complaints that you're getting now. Is it the same as it was when you compiled your top 10 list of 2008?
I haven't looked at it really recently, but I would think that it's probably pretty close. No call is generally the top complaint, because people like the law so much that they want to report anything that they think may violate the law. One thing we are seeing, though, is that many telemarketers are now operating from overseas, and that it's very difficult to trace them, first of all, because they can use technology and satellites to mask where they're from. And secondly, even if we find them, it's very difficult to prosecute them, because they would have to be extradited to the United States. And so, you know, unfortunately, the no-call list isn't quite as effective as it used to be because of these overseas calls. But nonetheless, most people still appreciate any call that they don't get from a telemarketer.
Now, the deadline for registering for the current two-year term was August 31st.
Yes.
And so now the next round will occur 1st of January?
Yes. I think it will be the end of November to get on the next list. The list is updated quarterly. And that's why we, you know, continue to tell people about the next list. It doesn't mean if you miss it that you can never be on the list. It simply means you'll have to wait till the next quarter list comes out.
Which brings me to the question, is it possible to notify people when they're going off the list?
I think it would be an extremely difficult proposition, because we take phone numbers.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have names that are on the list. And it would involve us notifying, I think at this point, about 1.9 million people, or some portion thereof, which would be a cost that would really be cost prohibitive.
Okay. That'll answer my question anyway. Let's go to Ed in Wausau next. Ed, what's on your mind today?
Hi. Right before for Christmas, there was a sale that Shopko stores. He had done a bunch of items, and I bought like four VCR players that were also CD players. And I was really encouraged by the people working at the store to buy the extended warranty, which I did for each item. And after 6 months, and I've had JVC products that have lasted a number of years, thing went kafui. And when I called up initially before I bought the warranty, and the person that answered said they were an AIG company, and they were in Virginia. And then when I called the same number, all of a sudden someone answered out west. They call themselves the new warranty company or something like this. And what they did was they just want me to ship it to Garland, Texas, with no name on the thing. It cost me about $20 to ship it there. When I took out a magnifying glass and read the warranty, they want like three chances to repair it. In other words, it would cost me $60 in shipping, going back and forth before I'd either see something. I called the insurance division of Wisconsin, and they said, "Yeah, they did have a listing of the telephone number and everything and whatever." And I said, "This isn't really insurance; it's a scam." But have you ever encountered something like that, like a fictitious warranty? Usually, when I have a warranty, they authorized me as the person from AIG explained, and I would have it repaired locally. But anyway.
We have had a number of complaints about extended warranties. Many places offer them, the retailer itself. Other people buy extended warranties online for some entirely from a product they didn't sell. One really has to read the fine print in order to know what they're getting, because many of them really aren't worth very much, even though you as a consumer, are paying something for them. So you really want to be sure that you really want an extended warranty and that it's worth the cost. And more importantly, make certain that you read it very carefully before you agree to purchase it.
What about shipping it to a blind address, just Gaylord, Texas, 2701 Shiloh Road, no company name or anything? They won't even identify themselves.
Did you try and find this company online by Googling their address?
I don't have a computer.
Okay.
I called Shopko themselves, and they didn't have any information. I guess my next thing would be meeting with the manager of the store and talking to him.
Well, I would certainly suggest that, and maybe Shopko itself will do something for you, and you won't have to go through all the hassle or the worry. You know, the other thing, and again, is, if you choose to ship it, you may want to talk to the United States Postal Service or UPS or some carrier to see, what kind of insurance, or tell them what your concern is and see what advice they may give you about shipping it to an address with no name.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right.
You're welcome.
Ed, good luck to you. Thanks for the call. And we go on to Robert in Green Bay next. Hello, Robert.
Hi, this is Robert from Green Bay area.
Yes.
September 26th will be 2 years since I made a complaint to the Attorney General's office through my state assemblyman, who hand-walked a letter to the Attorney General's office regarding real estate fraud racketeering by my former attorney, Michael G. Trelin. Now, Trelin has been before the state. There's currently a Supreme Court case, and this is the third farmer that he's ending up with their farms instead of doing legal work for him. He personally is profiting hundreds of thousands of dollars on each deal. Who do we turn to as a citizen of the state of Wisconsin to report racketeering under Wisconsin Statute 946.80?
Well, 946.80 And the racketeering statute is a criminal violation. It's a crime. And the Department of Justice may be able to get involved, but certainly your local district attorney has the authority to prosecute a case under that statute. So if you haven't, I would suggest that you contact your district attorney and see, you know, give him or her the facts and see if he or she will prosecute it.
Can I make a comment?
Sure.
What's that?
This occurred in three different counties, Portage County, Kewaunee County, and Wood County. The farmer in Wood County signed away his farm 10 weeks before he died from a hospital vet. I was a farmer who couldn't collect money for organic soybeans and had trouble with my finances because of that. And the third farmer is the Francis Groschick family in the Stevens Point area, and they had Stray Voltage and Michael Trew and their attorneys ending up with their farm. And again, each one of these, he's profiting $200,000 to $300,000 per deal.
Well, it's not really all that unusual to have crimes committed in different counties by the same alleged perpetrator. So, you know, if you're whatever county you're in, you should contact your district attorney. And I would mention to him or her that, you know, you think these offenses have occurred in these other situations, and your DA can take it from there. But cases from different counties are consolidated all the time.
Well, the Attorney General's office, racketeering occurs when if you do three deals in 7 years where you get property by fraud under 946-80. So there are multiple counties. No particular one county has the resources to pursue a case like this.
Let me ask you, Robert, what did the Attorney General say to your request?
I haven't heard a thing since September 26th. It'll be on September 26th. It will be 2 years. And the Representative Gary Talkin, who I just seen recently at the Conham County Fair, remembers distinctly remembering delivering my letter alleging my allegations.
Well, you know, you really ought to contact the Attorney General's office and indicate that you did file this complaint several years ago and you have not yet received a response. What's their position on it, and could they please respond to you as soon as possible? I certainly can't speak for the Attorney General's office or the Wisconsin Department of Justice.
Okay, I just turned the radio on. So what was your name from the Department of Consumer Protection?
My name is Janet Jenkins.
And you're in what office?
I'm in the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection.
In Madison?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right, Robert. Good luck to you. Thanks for the call. Our guest, Janet Jenkins, and the phone number for you is 1-800-642-1234. Let's go to Dave in Madison next. Hi, Dave. What's on your mind today?
Okay, here's my scenario, and I wish the previous gentleman good luck. Now, let's say I go into the biggest box store company in the world, and there's an item for $5, but I just want to pay them $4. And if I walk out, they're going to call the cops on me. Now, here's the scenario that just happened recently. I went into that same box store, the advertised price. I saw it, liked the price, went up there, told them. Then they overcharged me $1 on it. I caught it. I asked for reprimands for my lost time. I'm trying to get my refund back, if you can call it a refund. And I informed the person who rang it up. I informed the service person, and I made sure that the manager knew that they're overcharging us. So I went there the next day. They were going to take care of it. Went there the next day just to see if they did anything, and the price is still the same. So all these people that go to the biggest box store in the world realize they should check their receipts. But the point is, if I walk out the store and not pay them that $1, I'm arrested. But if they do it, they just say, I'm sorry. And then they continue to do it. In the meantime, everybody who's walking out without looking at their receipts are getting ripped off. What are my choices of getting even?
Well, I'm not sure what you mean by getting even, but we have within the Bureau of Consumer Protection a weights and measures section. And it's the weights and measures section that goes around the state to retailers, to gas stations, to grocery stores that have scales and scanners, to make sure that they're accurately scanning items, like in your case. And the way scanners work is that they have a computer program, and sometimes they just either don't pay sufficient attention or whatever, but they advertise an item for one price, but they haven't changed what the barcode means in the computer so that there's a problem. You're entitled to get your refund, if you call it that, on the spot, because you're entitled to pay the lowest price that's advertised. And if there's an issue with that, I would hope you would call us at Consumer Protection and ask to speak to our weights and measures section. Because if we get a complaint about, something's not working as it should, we will send a weights and measures inspector out there to check it out.
But, it's so unfair, though. If I did it, I'd get arrested. If I walked in there and said, well, you know what, I'm not paying this price, I'm going to pay the price what I think I should pay.
Mm-hmm.
And I just give them money and I walk out, I am going to get arrested.
Right. Now, we understand that, Dave.
How come my rights or the corporation rights are more towards them than they are towards me? And I'd also like that number because I would like to call in on the store. But, and let's not forget, I'm wasting 15, 20 minutes of my life because they're ripping me off.
Well, I can't comment. I don't have an answer to why certain things are treated or certain people or businesses are treated differently. All I can tell you is what the law says. I'm not going to get into any kind of discussion about what the law should say, because that is not our province. We enforce the law as it is, and we don't have any authority over saying what it ought to be.
Do you have recall the number for weights and measures?
No, but if you call the hotline number 1-800-422-7128, they will refer you to the weights and measures section.
And good luck to you, Dave. Thanks very much. Appreciate hearing from you. And let's go to Kim in Iron River. Hi, Kim.
Hello. I am calling. I think this would be who I talk to. I'm a business owner in Iron River, and I often get people using credit cards, and they come in unsigned. And I've had so many people come in saying they've been told by their accountant, by, organizations not to sign the back of their credit cards. And I'm wondering about the consumer protection issue of that there is some organization out there telling people not to sign the back of their cards.
I think that may arise from a concern about identity theft, that if they can see someone's signature, they can, as well as the number, they can manufacture a card and have someone's signature. However, there's no law that requires you to take an unsigned credit card. So you certainly can ask them to sign it or you can ask to see other identification, such as their Wisconsin driver's license, to verify who they are.
Yeah, I guess my issue is as a business owner, I'm doing my job by verifying the signature on the back, or even if it says check ID. But if they have an unsigned card and somebody else finds it and signs it, it now looks right to me as a business owner.
I understand that, but there's there's no law of which I know that requires credit card holders to sign their credit card. Rather, you have the prerogative of not accepting that credit, an unsigned credit card, or any credit card, if that's your choice.
Yeah. Okay. I don't understand the thought process of not putting something on the back, because you've just now made it easier for somebody to steal your card.
Well, that's a choice consumers are making, and they may be wrong in that choice and have not been given very good advice.
And good luck to you. Appreciate hearing from you. Andre in Milwaukee is next. Hello, Andre.
Hello. I'll try to make this quick, but it's not easy. The gentleman was trying to get a dollar back from the big box store. I have a story about where truth in advertising, where a plumber is advertised in the paper per hour. We invite him over to the house to give us an estimate. He gives us an estimate of time, puts it down on a piece of paper, then at the very end asks us to put our name on a signature that he says is the approval to do the work. A few days later, it turns out that was his invoice, of which we never saw the word invoice on it. It became an argument. We got into small claims court. The court commissioner, I took in two or three different codes of proper business contractual papers. She said she didn't even know the codes and ruled in favor of this plumber. And what I want to know is, how do I complain to the state consumer protection so that there's better truth in advertising and that there's better contractual law that someone states that this is a final billing that you're going to be charged, because we felt we were deceived and the court didn't even help us?
Well, again, I can't speak and won't speak for why the court ruled in the fashion it did, but you certain, and once a court has ruled, I can tell you that consumer protection doesn't have any authority to overrule a court. But you can certainly file a complaint with us, and I would encourage you to do so, because many people call us, and we encourage people to call us, that who are thinking about doing business with someone, and see if we have any complaints against them. So that's one thing you can do. If you are looking for a change in the law, that is something that is done by the legislature, so that you could, if you choose to, contact your legislators.
And tell them the same story and go that way.
Right.
Sure.
Andre, good luck to you. We appreciate hearing from you. I'm sorry we can't get to all of the calls, but time has flown. And thanks to Janet Jenkins, Administrator of the Bureau of Consumer Protection in the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection, for being with us today.
You're very welcome. It's always nice to be here.
And again, if you have a complaint, you can Google or search on Wisconsin Consumer Protection, and the hotline number 800-422-7128. Thank you very much for being here. We look forward to your next visit. And coming up, Jill Gilbert Wellitock is a registered patent attorney. We're going to be talking about patents, trademarks, copyrights, and licensing agreements on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.